Chapter 6 2.5 hours sleep was a meager ration, but I made a point of being up by 7:30 and downstairs shaved and scrubbed by 8. But I breakfasted alone. Mrs. Hall, impassively placing scrambled eggs before me, told me that my employer had left some time ago to do the post-mortem on Lord Halton's horse. I wondered if he had bothered to go to bed at all. I was busy with the last of the toast when Farnan burst into the room. I was getting used to his entrances and hardly jumped at all as he wrenched at the door handle and almost leapt into the middle of the carpet. He looked rosy and in excellent spirits. "Anything left in the coffee pot? I'll join you for a cup." He crashed down in a protesting chair. "Well, you've got nothing to worry about. The post-mortem showed a classical torsion. Several loops of bowel involved, black and tympanitic. I'm glad you put the poor beggar down straight away."
"Did you see my friend Soames?"
"Oh, he was there, of course. He tried to get in a few digs about you, but I quietened him. I just pointed out that he had delayed far too long in sending for us, and that Lord Halton wasn't going to be too pleased when he heard how his horse had suffered. I left him chewing over that."
The news did a lot to lighten my outlook. I went over to the desk and got the daybook. "Here are this morning's calls. What would you like me to do?" Farnham picked out a round of visits, scribbled a list on a scrap of paper, and handed it over.
"There you are," he said. "A few nice, trouble-free cases to get yourself worked in."
I was tempted to leave when he called me back.
"Oh, there's one other thing I'd like you to do. My young brother is hitching from Edinburgh today. He's at the veterinary college there, and the term finished yesterday. When he gets within striking distance, he'll probably give us a ring. I wonder if you'd slip out and pick him up."
"Yes, certainly. Glad to. His name's Tristan, by the way."
"Tristan?"
"Yes.
Oh, I should have told you. You must have wondered about my own queer name. It was my father. Great Wagnerian. Nearly ruled his life. It was music all the time, mainly Wagner. I'm a bit partial myself."
"Ah, well, yes, but you didn't get it morning, noon and night like we did. And then to be stuck with a name like Siegfried. Anyway, could have been worse.
Wotan, for instance.
Or Pogner."
Farnan looked startled.
"By golly, you're right. I'd forgotten about old Pogner. I suppose I've got a lot to be thankful for."
It was late afternoon before the expected call came. The voice at the other end was uncannily familiar.
"This is Tristan Farnan."
"Gosh, you sound just like your brother."
A pleasant laugh answered me.
"Everybody says that."
"Oh, that's very good of you. I'd be glad of a lift. I'm at the Holly Tree Cafe on the Great North Road."
After the voice, I had been expecting to find a younger edition of my employer, but the small, boyish-faced figure sitting on a rucksack could hardly have been less like him. He got up, pushed back the dark hair from his forehead, and held out his hand. The smile was charming.
"Had much walking to do?" I asked.
"Oh, a fair bit, but I needed the exercise. We had a roughish end-of-term party last night." He opened the car door and threw the rucksack into the back. As I started the engine, he settled himself in the passenger seat as though it were a luxurious armchair, pulled out a paper packet of Woodbines, lit one with tender concentration, and gulped the smoke down blissfully. He produced the Daily Mirror from a side pocket and shook it open with a sigh of utter content. The smoke, which had been gone a long time, began to wisp from his nose and mouth. I turned west off the great highway and the rumble of traffic faded rapidly behind us. I glanced round at Tristan.
"You'll have just finished exams," I said.
"Yes, pathology and parasitology." I almost broke one of my steadfast rules by asking him if he had passed, but stopped myself in time. It is a chancy business, but in any case, there was no shortage of conversation. Tristan had something to say about most of the news items, and now and then he read out an extract and discussed it with me. I felt a growing conviction that I was in the presence of a quicker and livelier mind than my own. It seemed no time at all before we pulled up outside Skeldale House. Siegfried was out when we arrived, and it was early evening before he returned. He came in through the French window, gave me a friendly greeting, and threw himself into an armchair. He had begun to talk about one of his cases when Tristan walked in. The atmosphere in the room changed, as though somebody had clicked a switch. Siegfried's smile became sardonic, and he gave his brother a long, appraising look. He grunted a hello, then reached up and began to run his finger along the titles of the books in the alcove. He seemed absorbed in this for a few minutes, and I could feel the tension building up.
Tristan's expression had changed remarkably. His face had gone completely deadpan, but his eyes were wary.